From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. If you were to conjure up the healthiest meal possible, you might well imagine one that involves salad and fresh fruit. But what's nutritious and what's safe are not necessarily one and the same. In fact, fruits and vegetables are the source of more foodborne illnesses in the United States than any other food group. So how do you make sure what's good for you also doesn't make you sick? Kelly Perrett's new book, The Safe Food Handbook, walks readers through the safety issues associated with everything from green veggies to red meat to seafood. How to eat well and safely. That's our topic next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Dave Iverson. If you open up your fridge, what do you see? If you pride yourself on eating well, maybe plenty of fruits and vegetables, maybe some fish, eggs, dairy products. If you focus on nutrition, you think about what you eat, but you might not think as much about what's safe. And that's something that gets one in every six Americans, some 48 million, in trouble each year when they acquire a foodborne illness. So back to the fridge for a moment. What do we really know about what's inside there? Does it matter that the fish you're thinking about having for dinner came from overseas? Is the cut-up fresh fruit salad you got from the deli really such a good idea? Kelly Perrett provides some of the answers in her new book, The Food Safety Handbook, How to Make Smart Choices About Risky Food. Perrett is a sociologist and microbiologist who's worked in public health and served as an advisor on health issues to the World Bank and the United Nations Development Agency. And she joins us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Delighted to be here, Dave.
Happy to have you with us. One of the first things I noted as I was reading your book and underlined was your point that what's nutritious, what I was just describing about what many of us like to think we have in our refrigerator all the time, green vegetables, fruits, whatever, those things that are nutritious aren't necessarily one and the same as to what's safe. Describe what the issue is with vegetables and fruits in particular, which, as I understand it, are the biggest source of foodborne illnesses.
Yes. Well, that's really the sad thing, Dave, that from a nutritional point of view, some things, raw foods particularly, are great. But from a safety point of view, they tend to be more risky. And so nutrition and food safety don't always agree. And there, of course, there are also some foods that we think are wonderful, like soy and so on, but they may have certain substances in them that could put our health at risk as well.
Well, you begin by offering sort of three little rules that I think are useful. So I'd like to mention them, and then we'll work our way through all the various food groups. But you have this sort of 3R rule that you think we need to be wary of, and let's work our way through those 3 R's: remote, raw, and ready to eat, starting with remote, meaning imported foods.
Yes, basically imported foods. And I don't know if you're aware, Dave, but Americans eat about 260 to 300 pounds of imported foods a year now. And that's pretty well doubled since the 1970s. And of course, some of it comes from countries that are as safe as we are, but some of it does not. And it's been found that, well, of course, studies differ in their results, but maybe imported food is 3 times as likely to have pesticides in it and a lot more likely to have bacteria in it than domestic food. So, but of course, again, from certain countries.
So it's one of the things you should first look at when you're going grocery shopping is...
Absolutely.
Is that always there? Can you always see on a package whether or not something comes...
No, you can't always. But now our government has introduced the cool labeling, which is country of origin labeling. And most foods, it's been progressively introduced, and most foods now have it.
Now, what countries should you be particularly wary of?
That's sort of a delicate question, and it's a personal decision too. As you know, I believe this is a personal issue, food safety. But I'm a little bit leery about, let's say, seafood coming from Asia, particularly China.
How come?
Particularly from, I've looked at the numbers. I've looked at the import inspections. And what I've seen there worries me. I've looked at ongoing studies being done by government. And the things that are turning up, such as drug residues and even antibiotic-resistant bacteria, worry me.
So is it a twofold issue? It's both perhaps how those foods were raised in that distant country, but then also that they're not fully inspected when they arrive in this country? Is it both questions?
Both, and still a third one as well, Dave. And that's the fact that it's not only how they were raised, but how they were transported, how they were stored, how they were handled in the plants. And regulations are not always as strictly introduced. And of course, growing environments are more polluted, as we know, both for produce and for fish. And yes, inspection is a problem. I mean, there's no way with the budget that the FDA has that it can inspect more than a very small percentage of food. Let's take seafood. About 1.6% are inspected. So that means we import about close to a million shipments of seafood a year that are not inspected.
So if I go to the store and I'm picking up a piece of fish and I see on it that it's from, let's say, Norway. Let's say it's a piece of salmon. You're saying that there's a 99 times out of 100, basically, that piece of fish has not been inspected. Is that right?
Yes, I am.
And then you're also seeming to make the point that it just gets more complicated. If it's from the further away you are, the more sort of steps everything has to go through before it lands in your refrigerator?
Yes, steps and time too. And time with some contaminants, such as bacteria, does translate into danger.
All right, we'll come back to the remote question and the question of imports as we go through all of these different kinds of food. But let's move to another one briefly. I mean, that's raw. You mentioned that we sort of like the idea of eating raw vegetables, raw carrots or whatever. What are the concerns about eating raw food in general?
Again, it's mainly a concern about more bacteria. And the trouble with raw food is that it doesn't undergo the kill step, whether it's cooking or pasteurization, as in the case of dairy. And that leaves us usually with more bacteria. Let's take dairy. I mean, pasteurization has come in and made us a lot safer as far as our dairy foods are concerned. But if you drink raw milk or eat raw cheeses, including those wonderful soft ones, you will be likely to get more bacteria, including some pretty dangerous ones. And raw produce is the same. We've had a lot of contamination in raw cut-up produce, you know, even in the last couple of months.
Why is cut-up, if you go, for example, at the grocery store, you'll see these, let's say you're going to have people over and you want to just get a platter of cut-up vegetables and you don't want to bother doing it yourself, or a fruit salad of freshly sliced pineapple or whatever. Is the actual act of having it be pre-cut a problem?
Yes. It is, in the sense that the more people that handle your food, the more likely it is to become contaminated. And that's, again, I'm talking bacteria, viruses, to some extent molds, not chemicals, usually. But the trouble is that a lot of our food handlers carry bacteria such as Listeria monocytogenes, Staphylococcus in their noses, Salmonella, E. coli, and they may not even have symptoms.
So generally speaking, I mean, part of what I hear you saying in both the case of imported foods and in raw foods is that the more direct route you can get from the source of the food to you, the better, because you're cutting out that many more places where problems might evolve.
Exactly, Dave.
And the last one of your three basic rules is watch out for ready-to-eat food. Describe what that is and what that includes.
Well, we basically touched on it already. It's anything that's pre-washed and pre-prepared, such as that cut-up lettuce and those cut-up vegetables. And you don't need to cook it. You don't need to do anything else to it. And again, it's the handling problem. And sometimes they even pick up contaminants from packaging. And it's salads, it's deli meats, it's raw produce in those wonderful cellophane-wrapped packages.
Dr. Helle Perret is our guest. She's the author of a new book called The Safe Food Handbook, How to Make Smart Choices About Risky Foods. Well, let's work our way through a variety of food groups and see some of the things that people ought to be concerned about. Starting out with produce, because again, we think of this as being something that is so good for us. And yet it is often the source of something that you write about and that's gotten lots of attention in the news, and that's salmonella. Heard about that with spinach in particular a year or so ago. What are the dangers associated with salmonella contamination and produce?
The problem is that salmonella seems to be running amok in our food supply. And in fact, as far as causes of food poisoning are concerned, it's the most common bacterial contaminant. And that unfortunately includes produce. And it's there in the soil. As I said, food handlers carry it. And in our own kitchen, we can get our produce contaminated, contaminate our produce with salmonella from putting it, touching raw chicken or raw meat, if it's got salmonella on it, and touching the produce. And so it goes everywhere. It's everywhere in soil, water, air. You can't escape it, basically.
And indeed, sometimes rather seemingly at least unlikely sources associated with the whole spinach salmonella story from a year or so past was that that came by way of wild pigs. So it's difficult to if that can be a source of, you can imagine how many more things might be a source of that as well. Yeah. What do you do to prevent that then? If you're someone who indeed, because again, these are things that are good for us, spinach in particular is something that's good for you. Yeah. What do you do to safeguard against then the possibility of salmonella contamination?
It depends who you are. You know, in this book, Dave, I stress not only problems but solutions. And the solutions are tailored to who the reader is. If you're in a high-risk group, say you've got fairly compromised immune system or are taking certain kinds of medications or are older, then you have to be more careful. If you're healthy adult, you may just want to say, okay, I'll risk it. Now, if you are in a high-risk group, I would suggest cooking that spinach. There are lots of great cooked spinach recipes, such as some of the Italian ways of preparing spinach, instead of eating it raw.
Let's go through some of the high-risk groups. I mean, it's fairly obvious, but I want to make sure we don't ignore something. Elderly, people with compromised immune systems, pregnant women,
yes,
children.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Can I tell you a story?
Sure.
Interrupt you for a moment. On the way here, I was sitting in the BART and I was glancing at the book. And you know how it is in the BART. Sometimes people sort of read over your shoulder. And the very charming young woman next to me said, oh, I didn't know pregnant women couldn't eat that. I mean, there's a lot that people simply don't know. And particularly people like pregnant women really need to know.
Well, let's stay with that then. And we'll come back to spinach and other vegetables. But what else should pregnant women be concerned about?
They should be concerned about nitrites. They should not eat much in the way of deli meat unless they cook it. In other words, pre-cooked meat should be re-cooked again. And the reason for that is that they're very, very susceptible to this bacteria called Listeria monocytogenes that keeps turning up in cold cuts and salads and fish dishes, prepared fish dishes.
So does that mean not only that someone who's pregnant shouldn't get turkey at the deli, they shouldn't order a turkey sandwich in a restaurant?
I wouldn't.
And again, that's because of this particular bacteria, Listerium?
Because, first of all, this bacteria is one of the main causes of death from food poisoning. Now, people with HIV/AIDS are 300 times more susceptible. Pregnant women, about 20 times. And it's deadly in about 21 to 25% of cases. That's a high, isn't it? It's pretty deadly.
And coming back then to the other sort of more serious concerns with produce in particular, not only for people in high-risk groups like pregnant women, but what are the if you had to prioritize, I guess, yes, what are the biggest concerns that people ought to be aware of in terms of fruits and vegetables?
Fruits and vegetables, I would be concerned about the bacteria, but I'd also be concerned about parasites. Now, parasites, we don't talk about them much, but they are coming in more and more. And many more of us are walking around carrying parasites, and many more food handlers are walking around carrying them. And they are getting into produce.
Define what that means, parasites. What are we talking about?
You know, think of a teenager who lives off their parents without contributing much. Now, that's not a nice joke, perhaps. But parasites can be large worms. They can be small organisms. And they basically live off, found in foods, fish, meat, vegetables, come in from the soil, often irrigation water, often people handling them, and they can make you very ill. They can make you ill for weeks, and they can stay with you, some of them, all your life.
And what's the safeguard against that?
Cooking, basically. Washing well, too, and cooking.
On washing, let me ask you about that, because you see, if you go to the grocery store, you'll sometimes see spinach in particular, for example. This is pre-washed, ready to go. Do you believe that label, or do you need to go ahead and always watch vegetables and produce of all kinds?
Well, I certainly believe the label. I mean, but that makes this your spinach, as an example, about 90 to 95% free of bacteria. But then that leaves there are the 5 to 10%, and now it's the research goes back and forth whether washing it again helps. Who knows? But if you feel better about it, do it. Personally, I do it.
What about the label of organic, which again doesn't, I suppose, necessarily, it sounds more nutritious. Is organic food safer food by definition or no?
It's safer from pesticides, apparently not from bacteria. Now, the research, some studies will say it's safer. Some studies will say it's much less safe. But I think the bottom line is that it's about the same likelihood of getting bacteria from your organic produce as from your conventionally grown.
What about going to a farmer's market where you see all kinds of beautiful looking produce, but in a sense you know that much less, right? It's not normally labeled, so you don't really know exactly where it's from or what even organic might mean, although you kind of assume when you go to a farmer's market that it's all fresh and wonderful and organic. What do you believe about that? Is that a good place to shop, or is that something actually where, as good as it might look, there might actually be more safety considerations?
I think that's very perceptive. You know, it again, is a personal decision. We all love shopping at farmers' markets, at least a lot of Californians do, and they're becoming increasingly popular. But you're absolutely right. In many cases, the food is not as much inspected or regulated because they're small producers. And my suggestion would be to know the person you're buying from. And don't always believe that it's safe. And also watch out. If that cheese at the farmer's market is sitting in a blazing sun, don't buy it.
Hallie Perret is our guest. Her new book is called The Safe Food Handbook, How to Make Smart Choices About Risky Food. We're going to go ahead and open up our phone lines early today so that we can get through as many of your questions as possible. You can call us at 866-733-6786. If you have a food safety question, 866-733-6786. You can email us at forum@kqed.org, or you can go to our website, kqed.org/forum. And add your question or comment online, and we'll get those questions answered as well. Again, the number 866-733-6786. I want to ask you about seafood for a moment, because that's one of the areas where we come back to this question or note that you mentioned earlier about imported food. 80% of our seafood, you write in your book, is imported. Again, why is that something that you should at least kind of raise your eyebrows up a notch before you buy it?
Because a lot of that seafood is farmed, and a lot of it is grown in very polluted waters. About half of our farmed fish, of the fish we eat, farmed fish we eat, is imported from countries in Asia. And a lot of the fish there is very crowded in fish farms. And who wants to lose profit by reducing the crowding? So instead, the fish are given lots and lots of drugs, and they keep turning up in the seafood.
And what are some of those drugs, and what are the concerns about them?
Well, some of them are antibiotic drugs. Some of them are other kind of pesticide, insecticide, because the fish keep developing diseases, skin diseases, all kinds of diseases. And, of course, they're not marketable. So we get all kinds of different drug residues, a huge variety in our seafood. Now, I'm not saying it's there every single time and every single piece of fish you buy. But if there's one food that you should be really careful about, I would say seafood, particularly imported seafood.
And why should you be more focused and have more concerns about seafood than you would red meat or any other kind of protein product?
Because there's sort of things that you can't deal with very well in cooking. I mean, meat you can cook, particularly if you buy the safer cuts of meat you can cook. Now, okay, hamburger meat remains risky, but you can deal with it. These kinds of residues in fish you can't always deal with.
And that would be a concern about farm fish anywhere, I suppose, not just some that's imported, but farm fish,
yes,
in this country
basically.
As well.
But in this country, some of these drugs that are turning up in imported farm fish aren't allowed here.
And the question about antibiotics is an interesting one, because that actually does come up in beef as well. The concern, as I understand it, about antibiotics is that if you wind up having meat or fish that has been given, those animals have been given antibiotics, then you start to wonder about whether or not we're creating more drug-resistant germs, right? Because and that would affect how what you – if you eat that, then you might be more drug-resistant. Is that the problem?
Well, sort of like that. But, Dave, I'm very glad you brought up that point because that's one of my main concerns about our food. And you're absolutely right. It's developing resistant bacteria. It's one of the factors contributing. It's what's called subtherapeutic use of antibiotics in meat production and in fish. And that means that you give antibiotics in low doses on a regular basis. And, of course, it contributes about, maybe 10-20%, but that's a lot. And it's these bacteria like Salmonella, E. coli, Campylobacter, the whole range, are more developing resistance more and more, and we're at risk.
I want to ask you a number of other things about fish, but before I do, our phone lines are already full, so let's start working our way through some calls as we work our way through all of these other topics as well. Ken in San Francisco has our first question. Ken, go ahead, please.
Hey, two quick questions. To say imported is awfully broad for us confused, overwhelmed consumers. Which countries should we be most concerned about? For instance, I buy imported greens and spinach, like you mentioned, and stuff. And the big organic grower, whose name I forget, grows its produce in Mexico. And we know that Mexico irrigation water can have problems. And the second question is, how about cooked foods like cookies? I shop in little markets, Asian markets, and many times I'll buy cookies from China, but at the same time I wonder, gee, didn't they have a melamine problem and poison their own baby formula? So is anyone checking these cooked foods?
Okay. Ken, thank you. Let's work our way through Ken's various questions. Which countries?
Yes, Ken, you know, I this is not a cop-out answer, but which countries you should avoid depends a bit on which foods are involved. Now, as I said, in the case of seafood, I would avoid, and this is my personal opinion. I mean, don't take it as a final word. I would avoid it from certain Asian countries, particularly China. In fact, I'd avoid also cookies from China because of the melamine, as you mentioned. But again, in the terms of, let's say, produce from Mexico, and you're right about the irrigation water. Now, that's, again, a personal decision. If you trust your distributor, keep eating it. But keep your eye on the situation. And you may want to avoid it during the summer because it's more likely to be contaminated.
And on the melamine question, that was something that came up a lot as Ken was mentioning baby formula in China in particular. Just briefly, because we're coming up on a break, can you describe what melamine is and why it's a problem?
Well, it's a chemical that shouldn't be in our food. And particularly when it combines with cyanuric acid, it becomes very deadly. And we found that out when that horrible incident occurred in China and our own pet food became contaminated. But just briefly, melamine is in our own food supply as well.
We'll come back and talk more with Dr. Helle Peratt about her new book, The Safe Food Handbook, How to Make Smart Choices About Risky Food. We want to include as many of your questions and calls as we can. Here are the numbers, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org or go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and add your question there. We'll work our way through as many as we can when we come back. This is Forum on KQED. I'm Dave Iverson. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Dave Iverson. Our guest this hour, Dr. Helle Peratt. Her book, The Safe Food Handbook, How to Make Smart Choices About Risky Food. Right before the break, we were talking about the melamine problem in China. You wanted to add one note to that, Dr. Peratt?
Yes, I just wanted to say that after this terrible incident in 2006 to 2007, the FDA discovered that we do have very small amounts of melamine in our own food supply. But just to put your mind at ease, it is being regulated and tested for. And the guidelines say we can only have about 2.5 parts per billion in, and only one in infant food.
All right. Back to our emails here. One listener writes in, when I bring vegetables home from the market, I've always washed them with plain water. I'm wondering, though, because so many other people have handled them, if I should wash them with soap. Does the soap soak into some items? What do you recommend in the way of how you actually go about washing vegetables?
Well, the Food and Drug Administration recommends washing them under running water, and it says that does not recommend using soaps or detergents because they're kind of unhealthy in themselves. Now, you'll find other people that do recommend doing that. But what you'll also find out there, and you may want to think of that if you feel uncomfortable, is using a little bit of a solution of vinegar and water or vinegar, salt and water.
And what does that provide?
Well, that provides just a little bit of extra help.
Anna writes in, I buy almost all my food from farmers markets. I process these myself, but not everyone has the time and money. A working parent with little time is doing better for her family buying the pre-washed lettuce and cut-up fruit than stopping at McDonald's on the way home. So let's not have the perfect become the enemy of the possible. So it's a fair point. I mean, these are
absolutely
all balancing questions.
Absolutely fair point.
And Vixit writes in, thanks for this wonderful program. My question is, if salmonella and other bacteria are so common, why haven't we become immune?
I don't think you can really develop immunity to salmonella, not that I'm aware of anyway. But you can probably deal, if you get a little bit slowly, you can probably deal with a big dose, better than somebody who's never been exposed.
Lee writes in, a friend of mine told me that rice is the most common cause of food poisoning in the United States. Is that true? And if so, are there certain strains that are more likely to go bad faster than others?
You know, I've never heard that. But they could be referring to arsenic in rice. But it's certainly not the most common cause of food poisoning unless it's been mixed with other things, such as, let's say, sushi. But then the rice isn't the cause for the contaminant.
What about sushi? That's something that would come up frequently because it would combine two of the things you've said we should watch out for, imported, perhaps, seafood, and raw, often at least,
yes,
not always.
Sushi is a bit of a risky food. There are a number of risks, bacteria, parasites, but if it's been professionally frozen, then you won't get them. And also chemicals in the fish, sometimes even toxic metals. But anything is risky when you get right down to it. If you're a healthy adult, you can eat a little bit of sushi and not worry about it too much. But I wouldn't feed a lot to your young child.
And is that, again, an area where, going back to our high-risk groups, that everyone is different in this regard? So it's not just saying this is risky and this isn't. It's risky for some people more than others?
Absolutely. And particularly, I should have mentioned pregnant women. I would take it very easy, particularly on sushi containing mercury and just sushi in general.
And back to our calls. Again, the number if you'd like to join our program and have a question for Dr. Helly Perret, it's 866-733-6786. Email us at forum@kqed.org. Paul joins us next. Paul, go ahead, please.
Hi. I was a little alarmed to hear the subject today because I'm an organic farmer locally, and we actually integrate poultry into our row crop operation. So in many respects, eating with us sounds to be about the riskiest thing you can do. But we actually propose that the way that we grow healthily is the healthiest way to eat, and we eat lots of raw vegetables. And I've been on the farm for many years, and we're fit and healthy. So the use of the word risky associated with eating raw vegetables, it seems a little bit alarmist, and I'm curious, what are the actual, how many people are really getting sick from raw vegetables?
Okay, Paul, thanks. Thanks for the question.
Yes, Paul, I think it's good you brought that up because maybe the point came out a little bit exaggerated. But going by statistics of foodborne illness, raw vegetables are involved a lot of the time. But you know, when you look at how many people eat them, then it's maybe a small percentage. So let's take that into account. And I would certainly not stop eating your own grown raw vegetables. I think it's wonderful. I wish I had. I do grow my own. I do eat them. And I feel perfectly safe doing so because I grow them.
Paul, the CDC statistics, Center for Disease Control Statistics, are these 1 in 6 Americans each year gets a foodborne illness, some 48 million Americans in all, 128,000 of whom wind up in the hospital. So those are the statistics. Fair point, certainly, about we don't want to sound unduly alarmist about all of those. But those are the actual numbers. Many of those, of course, don't become overly serious illnesses at all. But Paul, while we've got you, you said something that I didn't quite follow, and I want to make sure that I understood. You said you mix poultry and vegetables. What does that mean exactly?
Well, we follow just like Michael Pollan tells us what to eat. So I started doing what we do is we grow grass on fields, and then we pass birds over the grass. So that's pastured poultry, outdoor, free-ranging, pasture-raised poultry. We eat those both for meat and for eggs. And then once the birds have pastured that, we cultivate, irrigate, and plant our crops. And we actually have this cycle, which the idea of sustainability is to close that loop. And we feel that this is a very healthy way to have a low-input farming. And very exciting. And people can get this right in the Bay Area. We're in a real hot spot right now for this type of farming. And we also do, people can get the direct from the farm through a CSA. So a lot of great options for people to get the healthy food that's not coming from large processors, where it sounds like
right.
Most of the problems are happening, not necessarily from the farm.
Paul, thanks. Thanks for the call and the observation.
Well, you're practicing sustainable farming, which is a very nice thing, and I've done it myself in the past. But, in spite of what you say, I think you still should keep in mind the fact that studies have shown that crops can pick up contaminants from livestock and from poultry running around, and from water that passes over areas where, let's say, chickens run or goats feed or cattle feed, and then run onto the crops. But if you're keeping an eye on things and you're doing it yourself, obviously I think you know what you're doing, and I wouldn't be too concerned about it as long as you're doing it yourself.
The concern you're raising is it may be fine in Paul's operation, but the basic concern, it goes back to the spinach story because that was animals running around in rows. So, but that's obviously a different circumstance than the one that Paul is describing. But the potential is there? Is that
the potential is there, and you can't deny it.
All right. M.A. writes in, we sell a really delicious chicken pies. The problem is that they're – oh, I'm sorry. Whole Foods sells really delicious chicken pies. The problem is that their recommended sell-by date can be 5 or 6 days down the road. I'd never keep chicken leftovers in my fridge that long, so I can't figure out how their chicken pies stay edible for that extended period of time. This is a great question, and I'm glad you raised it because this whole question of sell-by date that you see when you're buying packaged food, especially processed food like a chicken pie or a meatloaf or something like that you can find, what do you need to pay attention to there?
Yes, it's a great question, and I'm also glad that you brought it up. There are various dates on your food, sell-by dates, expiry dates, best-by dates. Now, some of them simply refer to quality, and they vary. They vary from one food to the next, and usually you can keep food even a couple of days afterwards. But again, it depends.
Well, let's walk through a couple of examples. One that's very common for most people is you go to buy a half gallon of milk,
yes,
and it has on that date. Let's say today's date is January 21st. You go to the store, and it says January 27th on it. What does that mean?
Well, it means that you should probably drink the milk by then. The FDA says that you can keep it safely if you've got it inside the fridge, not on the door shelf, and probably at least 1 to 5 days afterwards.
You mentioned this is actually an interesting point that I hadn't really understood. Lots of people, me included, keep our milk on the shelf that's on the door of the refrigerator. One thing I didn't really realize is that different parts of your refrigerator are cooled to different levels.
That's
So describe where we should keep the most vulnerable, I guess, of our products.
The foods such as milk, which is certainly vulnerable, should be right in the center section of the fridge. And then, of course, you have coolers for your vegetables and fruits. By the way, vegetables and fruits are best stored separately. And then, of course, the meat container, which is usually even colder. But I do want to not missed the point about the chicken pie because the question was asked. And sometimes these foods have preservatives in them. They last a little longer. But one thing I want to mention too, that chicken pie, including from very good stores, has come in for contamination and for caused food outbreaks. There was one, I think, about a year and a half ago. I don't remember the exact date. And the reason was that it wasn't cooked properly. So they do need to be really cooked properly, particularly if using a microwave.
The other thing I've discovered when I go grocery shopping is that there's a fair amount of variation in those sell-by dates, so that if you're getting that chicken pot pie or meatloaf or milk or whatever it happens to be, if you sort of rummage around a little bit and go to the back of the shelf, you can find something that's dated 3 or 4 days later than something else. And that's what I always get, because to me it makes sense to get what's going to last the longest.
Dave, I do exactly the same thing.
And to Matt, who joins us on the Sirius Satellite Network in New Bern, North Carolina. Matt, go ahead.
Yeah, I was calling to find out about raw oysters.
Oh, Matt, sorry, we lost your call, but it sounded like you wanted to ask about raw oysters.
I think so. Yes, I think that's what it was. I would say, Matt, I hate to say this, if you love raw oysters, that they're about the riskiest seafood you could eat.
How come?
Because of Vibrio bacteria. And even including oysters from the Bay of Mexico, they're very likely to be contaminated with this horrible bacteria. And it's particularly horrible because it can cause really revolting symptoms, such as your skin can – well, I hope this doesn't gross you out, but your skin can peel off, you can get paralysis and all kinds of things. But if the oysters are irradiated, if you don't mind irradiation, of course they'll be safer. But I would – particularly if you're in a high-risk group, I would not eat raw oysters.
And when we – let's couch this as we can in a scale. So when you say it's the riskiest, what does that mean? If you eat a raw oyster, your chances are what of getting sick? I know these are hard things, but I'd like to put this in some context if we can.
I can't really give you exact numbers, but if you take into account the fact that raw oysters are not eaten by that many people, they're expensive for starters, but they cause quite a lot of outbreaks. In spite of it. And there are no numbers I've seen that says, okay, X percent. But again, it's hard to say. I mean, if I say riskiest, it's my personal opinion, but it is based on the studies.
And to John in Pleasant Hill. John, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to echo kind of what the farmer was saying earlier. And he mentioned the word alarmist. And I mean, right away when I turned on the radio and started listening, I just thought fear-mongering. You know, you hear about fear-mongering on the right and the left politically, And you know, the doctor said multiple times, this is her opinion, not really based on, you know, statistics. And I, you know, in life, there's so many dangers. I mean, personally, I like to eat food that probably has maybe a little old. I always eat food past the due date because, you know, the best buy date. My wife freaks out, but I just think, you know, bacteria is good for you. It's natural. It's part of life. And there's always risk. And I just think I was kind of confused about the subject on forum, and I usually really enjoy it, but you know, I just think I just implore your listeners just to, you know, enjoy food and to eat, you know, to eat wisely and to eat good food, you know, locally grown stuff. And it all has bacteria on it. And I think bacteria is good.
All right, John. Thanks for the call and the observation. Hallie Perret.
Well, I certainly agree with you on one point, but not on the other. I absolutely agree with you. You should enjoy food. So do I. And I really want people to enjoy it. And this is not really an alarmist book. It's a book about problems, but it also gives you solutions. And so it's okay if you want to take a little bit more risk, go right ahead. You can be safe. You can be a little bit safer, or you can be safest. Now, I would say that if you really want to take a few risks with your food and you're a healthy adult, don't worry too much about it. Go ahead. But then when you get a little bit older, keep in mind what I write in this book.
And it's all a matter of degree and perspective. There's some things you were talking about, raw oysters before, certain kinds of seafood or that require more caution. You're not saying that you should necessarily avoid anything raw or avoid anything imported.
I'm not.
It's putting it within a larger context.
Absolutely. But just on the point of good and bad bacteria, I wouldn't say all bacteria are good. Mm. Unfortunately not. But we do have such things as good bacteria.
Joe in San Francisco has a question about melons. Joe, go ahead.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
I got a question. The cantaloupes, the watermelon, the honeydew melon, I love melons. I'm addicted to them. But, you know, to try to find them in organic is hard, and they're very expensive in the organic. And my wife keeps telling me to stay away from that stuff because of all the pesticides. Is that true? I thought I read that the melons are probably better for you because they've got that hard shell and the pesticides are harder to get into it. So just want to know what you think about the melons.
Joe, thanks.
You're right about the hard shell. Usually fruits and vegetables with harder shells are less likely to allow pesticide residues to enter. But yes, and as far as cantaloupe melon goes, I agree with you. I've got one sitting in my fridge at the moment, and I plan to eat it for lunch when I get back, or dinner. Yes, in terms of what you eat and what you don't eat, it varies a lot where they come from, time of year, how you prepare them. But unfortunately, those wonderful cantaloupe melons and others have been involved in a few outbreaks recently. Basically, but nothing is 100% safe. I would continue eating them.
When you can, is it a good idea to peel both vegetables and fruits? In other words, should you peel an apple? Should you peel a cucumber?
That's, again, a personal decision. Some people peel all their apples. Some people peel cucumbers. I mean, my husband insists I peel them, not because he's worried about contaminants, but because he doesn't like cucumber peel. But it took me about 5 years of marriage to find that out, unfortunately. So it's a personal decision. But if you want to be just that little bit safer, peel them.
And let's go next to Ian in Oakland. Ian, go ahead.
Hi. I had a question about the vegetables. I'd like to eat a lot of salads. I was wondering, for instance, like spinach salads or, you know, some type of raw vegetable, is it okay if you partially cook it so it still has a bite to it, or steam it so it's not fully cooked?
Depends on what temperature you cook it to, but I think probably in the case of spinach, you can, if you keep stirring it, you can cook it fairly quickly and still have that little bit of crunchiness to it. That's the way I like my spinach, actually. Not overcooked. And it's delicious. Add a little bit of garlic, maybe lemon juice, and it's wonderful.
On the question of how much you should cook something, we should touch on that briefly, because that comes up with, you know, how much do you actually need to cook a hamburger or various other things? Because if cooking is one of the ways to make your food safer, how much do you need to cook?
Foods vary, but you can take as a general rule that you should cook foods between 145 degrees to 165 degrees Fahrenheit. Now, that hamburger is certainly at the upper edge, and you should cook it even a little bit more. I would, if I was you. And in the microwave, be doubly careful, flip it over, and make 100% sure that it's well cooked.
So the only way to really know whether something is cooked is through using a meat thermometer. You can't tell whether or not it's pink or by color. It really is a question of only having the degrees?
Sometimes you can, sometimes you can't. Depends on the food, as the book explains. But you can tell, of course, a meat thermometer is about the safest way. But timing helps too.
Emma writes in, more reasons for us to buy local and get things from family farms directly at the source. Many farms have farm stands or do community-supported agriculture, which allow us to know exactly where our food comes from, who grows it, and the opportunity to ask farmers about their growing methods. It's surprising that people are so disconnected from their food.
I think community-supported agriculture is wonderful. It's absolutely, you know, it's an amazing way to get your produce, particularly, although you can get other products as well. But, of course, it limits your choices a little bit. But, you know, it's a wonderful way to eat. But keep in mind that, you know, check out, choose your one carefully. And remember that not all community-supported agriculture ventures are organic. Sometimes they're sustainable production. But, yes, get to know them. And certainly, if you want to go to the effort and can afford it, join one.
Jeffrey wants to know more about you. Is this the same Hallie Perrette who's an artist?
Uh-oh. Yes.
And also wants to know, what is your PhD in? How can you be both a sociologist and a microbiologist?
Well, you know, some of us change careers, or let's say transition. I started as a microbiologist, and then I worked as such and put myself through graduate school and did other things. But I always kept somewhat in touch with it. Even health planning in developing countries, it comes into the picture.
Hallie Perrette again is our guest. Her book, The Safe Food Handbook, How to Make Smart Choices About Risky Food. And let's go next to Margaret in Redwood City. Margaret, go ahead. We just have time for a... I'm sorry, Margaret. We just have time for a real quick question. I should have told you that before I picked your name, but go ahead, please.
Okay. My question is about washing produce. I have a sister who washes all of her produce in water with a little bit of soap. There are those veggie washes on the market, and I rinse off my fruit. Does it do any good to rinse? Is it necessary to wash? Can you kill pesticides and bacteria?
Margaret, thanks.
Well, you certainly can't kill pesticides with these washes. And according to the research, you can't kill the bacteria much either. So I would pass on the washes and just use plain running water or a little bit of, as I said before, vinegar and salt.
And wash everything? I mean, wash whatever you buy? I mean, should you also rinse off fish and poultry?
Yes.
and all of that?
I wash everything. But remember with foods such as poultry that the handling is risky too. So wash your hands well afterwards because you can catch food poisoning from just touching poultry.
And keep everything separate in
Absolutely.
That process.
Particularly meats and vegetables you plan to eat raw.
Hallie Perret has been our guest this hour again. Her book is called The Safe Food Handbook, How to Make Smart Choices About Risky Food. And as you know, if you've been listening to Public Radio this morning, this is our fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Dave Iverson. And let's go back to our calls. Amy in Charlotte, North Carolina, has our next question. Amy, go ahead.
Yes, probably a comment. My father, for over 20 years, worked for the Army Air Force Exchange Service and bought food for soldiers worldwide. And his comment to me always was, when in doubt, throw it out. And, you know, what he meant by that is, if the chicken feels slimy, if some milk doesn't smell good, it's worth throwing it away and just buying more. It's not worth the risk to your health.
Amy, thanks.
Your father was a wise man. Absolutely. I mean, it's expensive sometimes to throw something out, but it's more expensive to get foodborne illness. At a book reading, let's say 2 days ago, somebody asked me, said, okay, my boyfriend left the pork out overnight. And, you know, I said we should throw it out. He said we should eat it. She was right.
Throw it out.
Yes.
What about leftovers? If you've made some chicken, let's say, and you have leftovers, you put it in the fridge. How long can you leave it there safely?
Depends on the type of leftover. But, you know, usually about, you know, 2 to 5 days, depending on what it is.
And can you warm it up more than once? Or should you, if you just warm it up once, then that's it? I mean, is it, again, something that you should err on the side of caution?
Again, it depends a little bit on the type of food. But if you do warm it up the whole lot, not just a little bit of it and put it back in, but warm the whole lot up thoroughly.
Here's a question from someone who wants a few safety reminders in a shared kitchen. I share a kitchen with 4 other young roommates. We could use some visuals in our kitchen to remind us of safe food practices. There are many online, but they don't seem very simple. Do you have any recommendations for websites for food safety resources?
The government does have a fairly good website for kitchen cleanliness and so on. But you could also go to mine just to keep up on such things. And that is the Safe Food Handbook, blogs.blogspot.com. And the rules are fairly simple. You know, wash, keep your counters clean, keep food separate, keep washing your hands. And there are certain basic principles.
Again, but, give the website again, please.
The safefoodhandbook.blogspot.com.
And also, I'm sure USDA, FDA,
they also have
websites on this topic. Okay. Don writes in, does freezing eliminate all risk?
No, it doesn't. We used to think, for instance, that it would kill all bacteria. We've now found out that this Listeria bacteria that I mentioned, that's quite common in cheeses, it does survive freezing. So does Salmonella and some of the others. In fact, Listeria can even multiply in the freezer.
A couple of people are writing in questions, Hallie Perret, about parasites. Karen writes in, after eating at several ethnic kitchens, 2 of our families suffered from digestive issues for 6 months. our test results were negative for parasites. Is there a possibility, though, that the tests weren't available to detect a problem when there really was one?
That's a very perceptive question and absolutely correct. Unfortunately, many laboratories don't test for all parasites and they don't test correctly. They don't do the required number of tests, nor does your doctor order them. So it's quite likely, I mean, of course, I don't know what you had, but it's quite likely that the family members could have had parasites, particularly if it went on for 6 months.
And C writes in about the same question. What are the specific parasites which concern your guests? In what foods are they found?
Parasites can be in any raw food. Now you'll be surprised at this, but if you look at the main causes of death from foodborne illness, there's a parasite called Toxoplasma gondii. And that, you can get it from your cat, but you can also get it from your food. And it crops up in raw fruits and vegetables, herbs, particularly ones such as basil. It can even crop up in almost anything, but also ones such as Cyclospora and many of the others, usually the smaller ones. In the bigger marine fish, you're more likely to be vulnerable to larger worms and in pork and beef, but not in the U.S. pork and beef.
Here's a question or an email from Mary. She writes in, I'm aware and concerned about the safety of food, and your guest is very informative. That said, I have a perspective as a server in a restaurant. I find more and more of our guests are quizzing me about every ingredient in every dish, and in many instances, basically rewriting the dishes on our menu to accommodate their vague and, I believe, overinflated fears about various kinds of food. Although food safety is of the utmost importance, I think the incidence of contaminated foods in our everyday life are minuscule in comparison with the amounts of safe food that we eat. Again, this question of perspective.
Yes, I suppose it is. But let me just add one thing, that the statistics show that restaurants, foodborne illnesses caused about half the time in restaurants. And of course, we don't eat half our meals in restaurants. In fact, restaurants are about the riskiest place to eat. And I hope as a food server, you're pretty careful. Not like the one I had the other day that took two pieces of chocolate cake, used her thumb to wedge them together and spread the icing across, didn't wash her hands, and then sent them out with a candle on top.
Hallie Perret. Again, the book is called The Safe Food Handbook, How to Make Smart Choices About Risky Food. Thanks for being on our program today. Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory and Christina Russo. Our engineer today is Howard Gelman. Dan Zoll is our senior editor. Romil Ramirez is our executive producer. I'm Dave Iverson, and this is Forum on KQED.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.